Welcome back, guys, to another episode of Business from the Bass Boat on the Serious Angler Network, powered by X2 Power. And guys, today we've got a really cool show lined up. We basically, the guy we've got on today had met at ICAST through Matt Pangrack. So thanks, Matt, for introducing me to Mr. Eric Luzak. But basically, we had a lot of conversations. I flew up and fished the Champlain event as a co-angler, and Eric was nice enough to take me out on a couple of practice days, and we just had a lot of good conversations on the podcast, on the show, and just his kind of background in the fishing and the business world. And so thought it'd be a great fit to get him on, and he had an interesting idea. I got to give all the credit to him on this, and to really follow up with the Ken Ma show that went really well, and a lot of anglers being interested in the sponsorship side and the business side of the fishing industry that will benefit them as an angler down the road. That's really what got this idea started. And so we're going to share, actually, so for those of you listening on the podcast platforms, still, you're going to get plenty of value out of this, but to really get the full picture, go ahead to the YouTube channel, Serious Angler YouTube channel. And the reason being is we're going to have Eric's actual media kit that he has gone through and utilizes when approaching sponsors. So it's going to be a great show. He's going to go through all of it and his background. So without further ado, let's bring Eric on. How are you, dude?
Good, man. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. It sounds like we were talking just pre-show there. You're getting off doing a little pre-practice action.
Yeah, I guess you can call it that. But yeah, the next stop on the Tota series in the Northerns is the St. Lawrence River. I haven't been out there since last year, so I spent the day messing around and seeing if it's still awesome. And turns out it's still pretty awesome.
It's still like the, I don't know, world-class best place in the world, it seems.
It is crazy. And I'm spoiled. My girlfriend's parents is like an hour away from there, from Kingston. I'm on the Canadian side. Okay. So I'm super close. I got to take advantage of that more often. I'm actually in their office right now. They run a magazine from their home office. So I snuck into their office. I'm really just, mooching everything I can off them right now. Place to sleep here and an office to use for this podcast. So,
dude, we need to have a podcast just on how to find a girlfriend that has parents right next to the St. Lawrence River that lets you do all this stuff. That is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a little bummed. They're talking about moving by next year too. So this might be my last summer with this connection, so I gotta we'll see.
Dang,
I'll try to sabotage the sale so they can't sell it.
There you go, that's what I'm talking about. Well, sweet. Well, dude, first I wanted to kind of just talk. I had some folks reach out and message me just on, hey, how did Champlain go and that kind of a thing, and I really haven't brought it up on the podcast, but let's dive into Champlain, man. I know you had been there a couple of times and we had talked how your tournament went, and that kind of a thing, but give a little background on how that event went in your eyes for you.
Yeah, that's actually the latest ever fish Champlain in the year. Usually they're often like still kind of on the spawn or around the spawn, or even like mid-July, they're a lot shallower. But by this time, they were like, those fish were, the majority were between 20 and 35 feet of water. And it was a live scoping deal for sure. Forward facing deal, I should say, at least. And I feel for guys like you in the back of the boat, because like for my co-anglers behind me, it was like if I didn't drop right on that fish, I wasn't catching anything. So good luck to the guy in the back. But I know some people did other things, and there were some co-anglers in the back that still caught some big bags. But odds were against you in that situation.
Dude, yeah, and I mean just from like you said that co-angling perspective, I drew Spencer Sheffield day one, which was just incredible. He just won on the St. Lawrence River, right? But he is so good at live scope, and it was cool to watch. And you're also very good at live scope, and I learned so much just watching how guys are scoping out there, and it's something that I like doing back home. But to that level, I mean, it was, you're right, on the dot. And so I didn't know what to do really as a co-angler. It's like, okay, do you make just enough casts and hope to drag in front of one? Do you throw the Carolina rig like you had discussed, just covering water, hopefully getting some of those bites that other guys are not? Do you just drop it right below the boat and just let him do whatever he wants up there, and you're ice fishing in your hole? And so it's kind of like, that's exactly it. It's a tough deal, and you have to take advantage of those situations where maybe a guy is just going shallow for a second and you can get a bite or two on the coast side. And so definitely probably one of the more frustrating events I've ever fished as a co-angler, where, it's like, gosh, this is one that I really would have liked to have my boat at, because it was it was really cool how it all worked out, but it was a tough event to fish behind, and props to the guys who did catch them, because there's plenty of co-anglers that did catch fish behind guys.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where, like, I've had co-anglers out on Lake Ontario and St. Lawrence catch 20 to 23 pound bags behind me. And I also caught a 20 to 23 pound bag. But it's different. And the way it was on Champlain is those fish were not really schooled up. There was a couple schools, but the majority of the fish, at least I was finding, were individual fish just cruising around, and I'd have to cast right on them and catch them. And every now and then there would be a group of two or three, and I'd catch the one. And I'd try to tell my co-angler, like, "Hey man, Rick, right over there." But I mean, again, if he doesn't see the, like, by that point, the boat's moved, and you know, so if you don't land right on them, it was tough. But yeah, my day. So yeah, we practiced together for a couple of days there. And one of the days, the first day we went out, we actually spent some time largy fishing. And I was telling you, like, I do not want to be largy fishing in this tournament. This is like a plan D type of scenario. But what I found 100% saved my tournament. I had a terrible day one. I had those deep smallies going, but the way the weather was with the wind and the overcast, I honestly still don't know exactly why I couldn't catch those smallies, but I couldn't. And like noon came by and I had one little like 16 inch smallie in the boat. That was it. And I cruised into what we actually found was we found a bluegill bed, if you remember. So we only caught one little largemouth on it. And then we kept cruising and we looked down and we're like, oh, look at that. Like we were like on top of a pretty large shallow up north. The bluegill beds tend to be pretty shallow. Mm-hmm. And then as we're cruising away, you had a big blow up on your topwater. Yep. And then we saw some local guy who was anchored in a pontoon boat catch like a 4 pound largie.
Dude, big old guy.
Like, this is going to be a largie deal. Like this, they'll be here because of that bluegill bed. Uh-huh. So yeah, sure enough, the end of day one came and I was scrambling and I was like, I'll try that bluegill bed. And I power pulled down and I caught 16 and a half pounds of largies without even lifting my power poles, just fan casted around the bluegill bed and saved my day. And then day two, I went back out for the smallies and I caught, at least I caught them. I caught 17 and a half pounds of smallies, which was what I wanted to do day one.
Yeah.
So it goes sometimes. You have all these plans, you know, and you got to make last minute decisions and adjustments.
Well, dude, I mean, to me, I think that is the difference between, and this is a pretty broad speculation, but a weekend guy or even I would say someone like myself who's kind of trying to break into this next level, Toyota Series, tour level, that kind of a thing, is you were able to still salvage that day. Now, did you have the tournament you wanted? No, but you had zero fish at noon on the first day of the event at Lake Champlain. And you're like, oh, crap. And you were still able to go with that plan A, B, C, D. Now you're on D. You're like, okay, dude, I mean, you sat there and you saved your day in the matter of 10, 15 minutes. That's what's impressive to me.
Yeah, that's something I feel like I've learned a lot. So I fished the MLF Pro Circuit for 2 years, and I learned that type of stuff there, because there was tournaments where you would just grind it out. What I was used to back home here in Canada fishing, every day was a slugfest. So you'd know by noon if you were going to do well or not, because everyone's catching fish all day long. But I think I learned a lot of how to fish with no fish in the live well for a long time, and how to always have those plan B, C's, and D's to not bomb. My good buddy, another Canadian used to travel with me, Charles Sim, we did after our first year together on the pro circuit, we did a live Facebook thing called Sucking Gracefully. And basically, like, well, what we learned this year was how to not suck. Like, we just learned how to always at least catch five something, you know. So, and that's what the tour level stuff is. It's a long game thing. You got to play small ball sometimes, and you don't want to throw away your whole season. And you know, I know the Toyota Series, it's not the elites and it's not the pro circuit, but there's still an amazing entry fee free championship at the end of the year that I would love to be at. So I don't want to screw that up. So hopefully we'll see what happens. I'm still in contention. Still, I got to catch them on St. Lawrence, but you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a big part of it. And right. And it's for all those folks that are playing the opens game, trying to get into the elite series. Like, it is a long game, and the ability to, on an event where you don't have anything going and your practice was either useless or your practice was great and now it's not happening, the ability to bring in a limit is huge. I mean, you time and time again, you look at the results of the guys like a Bill Lowen, right? Like, has made his career on catching fish. Like, I mean, he's just always has a limit. He's someone that is just consistent and he's going to cash a check. And that's just the way it goes.
Yeah, 100%. It's different, and it's different everywhere you go. So, trying to make a living at it, I guess most guys are.
That's right. Well, Eric, I think we had a good connection. Just, I like your mindset in the fishing space and then in the business world. And you'd come in from Canada, but you're in Western Canada for a lot of the year doing the mountain sport thing. Give folks just a little bit of background on everything that you do, I guess, as a professional angler.
Yeah. So yeah, Canadian. I grew up just north of Toronto, and actually on small lakes. So when everyone's, a lot of people see these Canadian anglers, they assume we're just fishing Lake Ontario or Lake Erie every day. That's not the case for many. I grew up on a small chain of lakes that actually is very similar to the Harris Chain of Lakes in Florida. So it was small lakes that are full of largemouth and smallmouth. They have both, but really good like pads and docks to flip and milfoil. And then you can walk through to other lakes. It's a whole chain. And it's kind of in like Toronto's cottage country, if you will. So that's, I grew up really fortunate with a place there, and got into fishing at a young age just by watching it, just by seeing people fishing the lake that I was on. I didn't know how to fish. My dad didn't fish. We had a little runabout boat. That was it. And I just saw guys in these early morning blast offs coming down into front of our place and dunking the milfoil and catching bass. I thought it was really cool. So then I get my parents to take me to the weigh-ins and watch the weigh-ins and try to, anyway. So from there, I just got into it. This is well before the internet or podcasts where you could kind of learn all this stuff too. So it was like magazine subscriptions and Saturday morning fishing shows back then.
Yeah.
I'm 36, by the way. I'm not that old, but old enough that, like,
you're aging yourself, dude. But you're not that old. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, man, he's talking like prehistoric.
But yeah, no, this isn't in like 50s or anything like that. But it was long enough ago that it was different. And anyway, so from there, I just like, you know what? I want to be a professional fisherman. So I didn't really know how I wanted to do it. Tournaments seemed great, but in Canada, like the biggest prize you'll have, like. Which actually my team partner and I, we've won it a couple times, is our classic, and you win like a $30,000 boat package. That's like the biggest thing you'll get. Mm-hmm. So you're not really going to make a living fishing tournaments in Canada. So the option is to either jump down to the States and do this stuff down there or guide. So at my age and my situation, I didn't really think that the U.S. Tournament scene was an option for me, and just kind of my own, naiveness. I just didn't even think, I didn't try, to be honest, but guiding was right there. I knew I could guide. So the first thing I did, I started this even before college. So I ended up going to college for marketing. So I always had just an interest in business and marketing and all that kind of stuff. But even before I even enrolled in college, I started my business called Bass Class. So I wanted a guide, but I wanted it to be a little different. So I was more going to focus on the teaching. And to be honest, it was because I was worried that if I had a day where it just sucked and no one caught fish, I could then say, hey, at least I taught you something. Because that's
what I like that honesty. I appreciate that because most guys would never say that. That's fantastic.
It almost never happened. Like there was almost no days that's like there was some tough days as there is. But like if I would just like sit with, especially if I love one-on-one or small, like two group people, two group outings. And if I just really worked like and sort of going through techniques with them and really breaking them down, you'd end up catching something even on a tough day. So,
sure.
So bassclass.ca, that was my business for a long time. And I ended up paying myself through college with that. It was summertime only. It was like a 4-month deal. I'd shut it down in the winter. And that's how I started making money in the fishing industry. I was 18 or 17 when I started that.
Wow. That is awesome, dude. That is awesome. And now, so really, I guess, how did you transition from there into tournament fishing in the States and working your way into the tour?
Yeah, so that kind of happened organically. So the whole time I tournament fish, and that, because as a guide in Canada, guide, educator, whatever you want to call me, it still adds credibility to be a tournament angler. So the whole time I was doing tournaments, they're almost always team events in Canada. So I was doing team events, having some success, here and there. I would win one, one day event here and there, would get some top tens or whatever, but it wasn't like, incredible. And then at the same time, I ended up becoming a sales rep. So for my sponsors. So at the same time as I was doing all of this, so guiding, tournament fishing, now I'm finished college. I needed to work. So the rep agency who basically had represented all of my sponsors in Canada hired me to be their on the road sales rep. So now I'm like really involved in the fishing industry at a young age. I think I was 19 now at this point. I got a little car, a little company car, and I drive around everywhere from anyway. I had a huge area.
Yeah.
And that was great. And I made some great connections, which still worked out. Like that's how I met Lunker Hunt, who's one of my title sponsors now. You know, that's how I met, Daiwa and all these companies that I still work with now. I met most of the, either the people that run the companies or the heads of whatever department through that.
Sure.
So that was just kind of another little part of the, the equation that, that just kind of worked out. But I'm not going to lie, the money as a rep kind of sucks. So it was good. It was, you're in the fishing industry, you're talking fishing, but turns out you're fishing less and the money kind of sucks. So it's like, all right, I got to get more. But this whole time I'm just doing tournaments as, for fun, but I'm just doing tournaments on the side. And then what really happened, the big change was that I entered the, it was called the FLW Canada Cup at the time. This is before FLW turned to MLF. And the winners of the FLW Canada Cup would go straight down to the Costa Series Championship, it was called then.
Yep.
And fish in the international division in the Costa Championship, still had $100,000 first place prize, whatever it was back then.
Sure.
So I just kind of entered that tournament because it was close to me. And I was like, oh, I'll hop in this tournament or whatever, and hopped in, won it. Just kind of had that was a 3-day event. Had a really good 3 days. All largemouth was awesome. It was all punching mats. They were all up underneath mats and like 2 feet of water. It was great.
That's awesome.
Getting like 18 to 20 pounds a day of largest under mats. And then from there, I went down to the Toyota Series Championship. I ended up winning the international division in that event on Gunnersville. And then that was the deal. The winner of that division got to go and fish the Forestwood Cup the following year, as well as FLW Tour. So from two events, two wins, two good events. I was on a bit of a hot streak, I guess. Yeah. I went from just like, do 10 tournaments a year, keep my sponsors happy, but I was also a sales rep or whatever, to boom, now I'm fishing the Forestwood Cup. And hey, next year I'm going to do the FLW Tour as well.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Dude, well, I mean, okay. To that point, and this is, I think, a good point in the sponsorship realm of things, and this kind of goes back to some of the stuff Ken had also preached. It's like, okay, whatever level of angler you are, in my opinion, if you are attempting to make this a career or have some capacity of a career in your life, you had already been preparing from a sponsorship standpoint with the sales rep job and sponsors and all that, and now boom, you've had two fantastic events and you're like in a new career path. You're like, oh, I might be fishing the tour. So, but that gives you at least that backing and that knowledge to understand how stuff works. And then also that springboard to turn around and say, hey, I made the big leagues now, can we step up in this realm? Can we step up? We're going to have more media coverage. We're going to have a lot of new stuff here. I don't know. I think that's huge, man.
So, and this would be a great segue into my media kit, because up until this point, I never had a media kit. I had a little, the one page Word document, like resume of my
resume.
Yeah, I had that. That's all I ever had. And now all of a sudden it's like, and like you said, I kind of was preparing for this the whole time, even if it was inadvertently. Like I had the connections, I had the marketing skills, I had a lot of this stuff already there. I had evidently some fishing skills, even if it was just a couple quick good events or not.
Some fishing skills.
All of a sudden you have this opportunity. So, but now I had something to sell. So up to that point in Canada, you're not going to get money from, I shouldn't say that. You can get money from sponsors. It's a lot tougher. It's a smaller market. And what happens is if you apply for pro staff, they'll put you in like the Canadian division pro staff. Well, then that's even a smaller budget. So you want to try to be in like the, the national level or the international level budget if you can. Sure. But as soon as they see you're in Canada, like, there's a Canadian rep, go talk to him. You might get a spool of line on them. Right. That's kind of how it goes. But yeah, all of a sudden within like, just like throwing a chatterbait around on Gunnersville, all of a sudden the next day I'm qualified for all this. So I have a story to tell and I have something that I can put in a package and it looks really good. And yes, there's real facts and figures of the eyeballs that are going to be on me at the Forestwood Cup and the following year at the FLW tour, which that the first year I fished the tour was the first year they changed it to the pro circuit. It was the year I did it. So I fished the last Forestwood Cup, which was amazing. It was an unbelievable experience. I'll never forget it. I finished 16th or 17th. I did pretty good. Wow. I was one fish off of a limit on day two. It burned me, and I lost my keeper fish twice that day. But it was cool to be kind of in contention and, like, you know, on something. I had something going. That was amazing. Fishing against like Thrift and all these guys.
And then, where was the Forestwood Cup that year?
That was in Hot Springs, Arkansas on Lake Hamilton.
Wow.
And it was like 100 degree water. It was crazy. Like, I've never caught a fish before. Then when I pulled him out of the water, he was hot to the touch. The fish was like hot. It's like, Canada. Like, this is crazy. How are these fish alive? Anyway, then that segues to how, I need a media kit. So, funny enough, the office I'm sitting in right now is the office for Motorcycle Mojo Magazine, which is a nationwide.
The motorcycles in the background. Yeah,
motorcycle in the background. So this is what my girlfriend's family does. They run this magazine. They have some art skills, some graphic design skills. So I said to her mom, I said, Gwen, I need something put together. Don't really know what I need. And anyway, so they basically made me the first version of one that I ended up taking myself and just kind of customizing it. So
sure.
A media kit is, like, I know, like, you have a media kit for your podcast. Sure. Magazines have media kits to sell advertisements, you know, in their magazine. And they're all a little different, but basically at the end of the day, you're trying to, you know, tell the person who you are, what you do, and then where the marketing opportunities are, right?
Yeah, 100%.
And then 100%. Usually the last section is how much does it cost to be involved?
Yep.
And that's the only thing we're not going to show here. I know that's going to probably you're showing everything, you're not showing that. I'll talk about it, but that's different on every single media kit that I do. So I have this, the one we're going to show is my generic one, which is kind of like, I'd use this as like a foot in the door media kit. You know, you're not going to say like, Hobie eyewear, like, this is me, I want $30,000. You know, I don't even like starting with something like that. Right. So sure. I just start with, here's my general media kit. You learn about me and let's talk. Let's just get a conversation.
Start a conversation. That's exactly right. And that's been our approach always too, is let's reach out to the person in the marketing department.
Yeah.
Ideally have a connection before that or have a reference from somebody. But to me, that process is just to start a conversation. See, also you need to decide too, as an angler, as whatever you're providing, if this is going to be a fit for you too. If it's a company you've always been after and you love their stuff, okay, like that's great. You realize you're going to rep them great. But if it's like, hey, I want to hear what this company's about necessarily before I go and put my kind of reputation on the line. You want to protect that too, in my eyes. So you want to align yourself with folks that you are seeing the value in each other, and also just want to build that future long-term relationship with.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Should we get into it here?
Yeah, do you pop this up or do I pop that up?
Sure. I'll pop it up and then I'll have you go through it. So guys, again, for the folks that are tuning in a little bit later on the podcast, the YouTube channel is going to be the best option here because it's going to show everything in his actual media kit. For your information,
but I'll do my best and try to describe it to someone who's listening while they're driving. So I'm a podcast listener and I listen to it while I drive. Like, getting on the tour, it was like, got me through these drives. I'd listen to any random fishing podcast I could find.
Dude, I'm with
you. I would never have time to go home and pull it up on YouTube. So I feel for you guys.
Yep, I know. Every time someone says that, I'm the same way. I mean, I get all my content through podcasting, but anyways, all right. So we've got the media kit pulled up.
Yeah. So this is the cover page. So cover page, it's got to kind of get people's attention. So I would usually, and so this is my 2022 one, I believe. Every year, basically, I would just take the same media kit and just like change the pictures out, change the dates, you know, whatever. But like try to have one big new picture, you know, an in-your-face picture. So that was from the picture here. So it says Eric Luzak, professional angler. And there's a picture of me with, that's actually a 6'4 smallie that I caught on Lake Ontario. During the Bass Open event.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was the highlight of my year last year. I do the whole tour, the pro circuit season, but my highlight was on a Bass Open event. Go figure. But,
I like it though.
Yeah. So, so it's super simple. And then there I have the Tag Warehouse Pro Circuit logo because I, at the time, was a pro circuit angler. So, you know, again, just in one page, almost like a business card, like, this is my name, I'm a pro circuit angler. And then at the bottom, there's three little just highlights. So it's the fact that MLF pro circuit angler, 2019 FLW Forestwood Cup qualifier, And I just threw in the international division champion. That's how I, so it's a real quick Cole's notes on how, who I am and, you know, what's this all about.
Sure. Sure. Exactly, man. I like it.
And then I got into more of like the background of me and my journey. So these next two pages, mm-hmm. I guess it's kind of condensed into one page. So I called it the journey. And again, you need to have an angle of some sort. So I found that my angle was the way that we talked about this, how I started with guiding and I started just by watching fishing off my dock, and that, you know, 20 years later, and I got in, you know, it just kind of turned into this almost organically in a way. It's kind of a cool story. And a lot of guys, you know, they're born into this and this is what they're doing, and that's great. And I've loved fishing since I was 10 or 12, but just didn't really think I had the chance to do this. So it became a bit of some steps. So this just a little wordy. I'm not going to read it word for word. I don't expect anyone else to either, but basically it talks about my story from the beginning. What we kind of already talked about, at the start of this podcast. But it goes on just to say, you know, that, yeah, that I, what I won, blah, 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 and how I started at the club level. That's right. So I didn't mention that. So how I actually got into tournament fishing was, we did have a Bassmaster club up in my area. They didn't have a junior level club. So when I was 13, they let me join like the adult club. That was my first chance to fish with other guys, you know, other than my dad. Cause at that point by 13, I was already teaching my dad how to like throw a bait caster and stuff. He didn't really know any of that. So I needed someone else. So I joined a bass club.
No, well, here's the thing. One quick segue, and this is great. What I love about this is the storytelling aspect. I think that folks don't necessarily, they just assume that every sponsor that you're requesting, whether it be in the fishing industry, some folks even are like, oh, well, the non-endemics, they know what pro fishing is. And some people literally don't, and they don't necessarily see that. So I think that having an explanation of their journey and the way that you got into this shows your backing into things. I mean, it was a surprise to me. I was having a conversation with a BPT angler at ICAST, and he was talking about a pretty large brand in this industry, and they did not understand the difference between the BPT and the Tackle Warehouse Pro Circuit. And it's just like, maybe not everyone is as tuned in as we are and absolute fish heads in this. They're interested in selling baits, and it's just, you know, it's a part of their wheel, but it kind of blew me away. So I think it's important to have some of that storyline in that background. The other segue I was going to have was basically, it's really cool to me that Major League Fishing prior FLW, but they still have that international pull for the Toyota Series Championship. I think that's incredible. That's super cool. It gave you an opportunity to make it there.
Mine was the last time that you went to the Forestwood Cup, unfortunately, but now you still win. I think it's give you a $10,000 bonus if you win your division now.
Yeah. Within the Toyota Series Championship. Yeah. And then, now, do they have any way with the international to still qualify for the tour, or is that gone?
No, as far as I know, no. I was the last one to do it that way, I believe, which is kind of
crazy. Yeah, that is wild. And then the other aspect of this, again, just for folks getting in, like many of us, same deal. The reason I got into tournament fishing was joining a bass club eventually. Luckily, I had the opportunity in the junior kind of club stuff, but then going out and fishing with guys in that federation type setting was so crucial, because you get to fish behind guys who, like you said, you'd only fish with your dad before. And it's like, well, if your dad doesn't know how to flip a jig, and then you draw somebody in a tournament, or you are able to go out with a guy like that, I mean, that just gets your gears turning and gets you more interested and wanting to do more things.
Yeah. And now with so many BFLs and Toyota Series events around, you know, hopping as a co-angler and those is super valuable, almost as much so as a club. I didn't have that opportunity. So for me, it was club stuff. So super local, cheap too. It's so cheap to do that. That's how it kind of all started for me. So yeah, try to tell that story, try to get it across. And you made a good point there. I've had a bunch of people not know the difference between the Bass Pro Tour and the pro, like it's kind of been like my life the last 3 years explaining it, to be honest. So
sure.
And I don't even really break it down too much in this, because this is meant to be pretty general, but it does talk about tournament fishing in itself, and a couple of pictures there. So there's a picture of me up on stage at the Forestwood Cup, and then a picture last year down in Okeechobee. So just again, a couple of highlight pictures.
Yeah.
So now we've done kind of introducing yourself and, you know, what you're all about. Then what I include on this one, and now this is, I do the year in review because this is also what I send to my current sponsors. So every year I resend a media kit to FXR, Lunker Hunt, Wu Tungsten, Daiwa, you know, all my sponsors. So I do send them a different full report of my year, but this is just a really nice one page year in review.
Sure. You
know, get some cool pictures throughout the year. The best thing about fishing, like even the Opens, Tota series, is those media guys are so awesome. They're going around taking snapping pictures everywhere. Sometimes it's worth it just as much for you to be there to get that one picture of you fishing on the St. Lawrence River with a giant tanker behind you than it was for, you know, cashing a check, because that picture can be worth so much.
No, and Eric, that's a huge point. I don't mean to keep cutting you off. This has been great. But another thought that I've had around that, I mean, and back to Ken Ma talking about the West Coast stuff, a struggle on the West Coast to show a national and professional level scene is the media coverage, in my opinion, for some of these events. I mean, even, you know, large scale events. And what's cool is the Toyota series out there has done a fantastic job. Now, it doesn't draw the boats as much out west as in other places by any means. And there's other tournament organizations that can draw more boats out west. But the trick is the guys who are professionals that see value in their media is huge. And I think a caveat to that with me fishing the Toyota series last year in an unwrapped boat as a boater, I noticed you get a lot more pictures in a wrap boat. And you know what I mean? I think in a jersey on and a wrap boat, folks, especially the wrap boat aspect, they are trying to help anglers out, right? They're like, hey, this guy's serious. It's going to help him in the long run. And that's my thoughts. And I think it also looks cool, but that's just a complete side tangent. Well,
I 100% agree with that. The camera's drawn to people with wrap boats. I've seen it. I've been fishing in the crowd and I'm the only one they got a picture of. And I wasn't even catching fish. I was sucking actually. And there's people who picture me like casting or something, cause I got this wrap boat. And I looked. The other thing that's honestly, and it just comes back down to like the marketing side of me is networking. Get to know these guys. So that was Kyle Jesse that took that picture with that tanker behind me. I've been buddies with him since the Forestwood Cup. He used to work at a tackle shop in Hot Springs. And I just walked in and we started chatting and we're still friends to this day. So when you have a personal connection with these guys, they're going to come up to you way more often, take more. And they text you the pictures within like before you even get back to your truck after weigh-in. They're so fast with it. It's incredible. And I'm talking all of them, like, you know, on the MLF side, the Bass side, everyone. Jody White's amazing on MLF and all the guys that work with him. But yeah, get to know them. They're all awesome dudes. They're there to take pictures of you. So,
that is huge advice. And I agree. I mean, I think just even to the college fishing days of like, you get to know one media guy and it's like, they're pumped. They want to take pictures of you. They're checking up on how you're doing. And, I think I've done a poor job of that here recently, but I think that's huge. I think that those guys, are there to do that. And if you can, have more contact with them and chat with them, who's to say they're going to send you a picture before it even gets out. That's huge.
And he didn't even get a picture of me catching fish, but so ended up being some of the, this is then the next life here. There is a good fish catching segment coming up here. So every now and then they get you when you actually land a 5-pounder, which is nice. That was also in the St. Lawrence, but at the Pro Circuit event. So my year interview is done. And then I'll just go into this is your fishing resume. This is you're going to have it on here. And I take so many out and whatever, but what I do like about this is it kind of shows how long you've been doing something and that you've been at least in some way relevant. I don't know if anyone really looks or cares about that. And I also throw my next year's schedule on there. And I think that's important to see what I'm already planning for, and pictures, every single thing, because it's kind of meant like it made like a magazine, right? Again, this is made by my in-laws that have a magazine. So it's a lot of pictures. It actually looks really great when you have this full screen on a computer. And then does this one have my, I might not have the on the road one on this one. So then I go into, where I've been in the, I call it in the press, this next page. So, and it's hard to keep track of everything you do, you know, like, I mean, there's a lot of little magazine blurbs and whatever, and a lot of social media posts and shares and this and that, but there's some core stuff that like, you know, hopefully that you can get some good exposure with. So I tend to try to screenshot those and just boom, have it in there. And again, it's just showing your sponsors that you're relevant. It's, you know, this one in the bottom right here, it's a 4-page spread that a Outdoor Canada magazine did on me years ago. That would have been, 10 years ago now, but it's still really cool. They did a full 4-page spread You know, and that was more about my guiding back then and a little bit about tournament fishing, you know, and then up till even last year, MLF still does some articles about me. That was me, Carolina rigging, on the St. Lawrence, which, I almost forget kind of talking about that because it's still catching them. But anyway,
and that was, did they do a video on that? It looks like there's
a video. Yeah, that was, didn't catch a good one. I lost a good one in that video, but he didn't. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We went out for like 45 minutes. And then usually in here, I don't have this one. Maybe I'll pull. Okay. So the other thing I do, I'll just talk about it. So, it didn't make it in my generic one, but then I do a travel map. So I have a map of North America and I highlight every single state and province that I will be in. And then, and I calculate all of the, basically the distance travel that I'm going to be doing that year from each tournament. That's really easy to do. You see Google Map, you know, so far.
Yeah.
Super easy. And then there's real facts you can get from like the American Trucking Association that'll say how many impressions that many kilometers will actually get you on the interstate, you know, highways. So it's projected, it's not exact, but here you are. I'm driving around in a wrap boat. A big part of this wrap boat, wrap truck is to show off the brand. And that's more what the non-endemics like. You know, Lunker Hunt, they don't really care that that Lunker Hunt's going down the I-95. It's great, but what they want is the more intimate kind of work with them. So when I'm actually doing like posts just for them or helping them out, shows that kind of stuff. FXR, one of my other premier sponsors, they come from the moto world and the snowcross world. Actually, a snowmobile company first, so they really get that logo on trucks deal and that eyeballs thing. So they really cared about that, the exact size of my logo on my boat wrap and how many kilometers was it going to get, and that all went into their equation on when we worked out a deal. So that was really important. I didn't have it in here. I didn't know it wasn't in this one, but there's a whole other page just on my travel.
Sure, and I that's some juice, man. I've always wondered because I've looked at just a couple of different anglers kind of media kits before, and I've always seen those impression numbers, and I've always wondered, but that's coming from the American Trucking Association.
Yes. That's I quote them right in that. And again, I mean, they're probably talking about a giant transport truck that's huge. Well, you know, they obviously are, but you can still get the idea like that. And there is a lot of eyeballs on that. It's true.
Oh, 100%. I mean, every time you see a flashy boat and truck go by, like everyone's looking. I mean, I've had people stop and be like, oh, what's this? Like, even if it's just a unwrapped Phoenix boats with power poles, they're like, hey, what are these things on the back? What do you do? Yeah. You know, they ask, you know, all the time.
I was going to get a boat wrap that said, these are power poles, they're shallow water anchors. I'm going to have that right on my wrap. So I answer that so many times. Crazy. So, especially in Canada, they're pretty new in Canada. So anyway, then the social media page, everyone has to have it. My social media is nothing fantastic, but it is what it is. So I tallied up all my followers from all the things. He's trying to make it sound good. You know, if on Facebook you got 5,000 friends, but on Instagram you only have 1,000, well, you have 6,000 followers, right? You kind of add that together. You know, assume, unless they're doubles, which they might be, but that doesn't matter.
I like it.
Yeah. And then it's amazing what you can actually do if you really tally up your reach and your impressions and some of your engagement rates from your posts. And Instagram is great for that. I just do it myself, old school. I go through each one and I just kind of tally it all up. I do it once a year. You can go through programs. I think we talked about it when we were fishing there on Champlain, that you can outsource to these companies that will do that for you. Don't know what they charge. Probably not worth it. I'm pretty cheap. So
I'm with you, man.
Yeah. So yeah, I tally that up and, you know, and it's something that if, and actually, yeah. And we talked about that. Some of these companies can absolutely fact check this. If you say you have got all this reach, so you don't want to BS them, right? So you gotta be honest. Like this is it, you know? And if they're interested in you, they're interested in you. Like your followers are going to be unique to you anyway. And that's still valuable to any sort of company, you know, especially depending on what kind of level you're talking about sponsorship wise. But so yeah, got to be in there. A couple of screenshots of some of the, we did virtual seminars because of COVID and all that kind of stuff. This day, there's a picture that says live coverage. This was a really crazy day. I don't even know if we talked about it when we were fishing, Deacon, you and I, before, but it was in the pro circuit event last year in St. Lawrence, and John Canada's boat broke down.
Okay.
And he had like 19 pounds. We were actually both tied for ninth going into the third day, oddly enough. Yeah. And I happened to be fishing near him, And he yelled over to him. He's like, "Hey, Luzak, don't go far. I might need you." I'm like, "Oh, yeah, okay." And we were far. We were like a 45-minute run, if not more, back to the ramp.
Oh, man.
So anyway, long story short, we decided right at that moment to just he had the camera boat, someone from the camera boat driver, just hop in his boat and drive it to troll it to shore. And he was going to hop in my boat. We called the tournament director. "Hey, can we both fish together?" "Yep." So he had his fish in one live well, my fish in another live well, and we both fished in the front deck of the boat. Separately, but together, if that makes sense.
Wow. I think I heard this.
So this was all live on MLF Now because he had such a good morning. They put a camera in his boat. I was sucking and I continued to suck as that day went on, but it was wild. So I went from fishing by myself. I had a pretty, you know, chill Marshall. We were chatting to all of a sudden John Canada in my boat and this camera guy who was like, he really reminded me of like the guy from River Monsters. If you ever watched River Monsters show, like kind of grizzled vet, like adventure guy, been everywhere and just like telling us what to do and where to stand. And this, I'm like, dude, I'm trying to fish. Like, just walk away. Like, if you've ever been live, some and nothing against them, they have to do this to get the shot of a lot going on. And, but they'll just tell you what's up. They'll just be like, "Hey, you need to
see." No way.
Yeah. Yeah. In certain situations, and especially like with like, boating around, like he sat on like the gunwale of the boat while like John and I boated around in the driver's seats, if you will. And he wanted us to chat because he thought it was great that we were just like talking about spots where we're boating. So this camera guy, he's like leaning back and he sticks his foot out to me and he starts like kicking me in the leg. I'm like, "What do you want?" He's like, "Hold on to my foot, hold on to my foot." So I'm holding on to his foot while I'm boating like 50 miles an hour down the St. Lawrence. He's leaning back so he can get the whole shot of the two of us talking. It's crazy.
Oh my gosh, dude, he's trying to make that media like that he's back on the Amazon like trying to get
this shot. And he was telling us that he did stuff down there and like all these Africa trips. So anyway, that was a crazy thing from last year, definitely a highlight. And I ended up not catching many fish, but I still came out with a really good story and some good I guess exposure from that. A lot of people messaged me like, "Hey, that was so awesome what you did."
No, that's I think that's a huge part too, man. And I do think it's really cool. I was watching the weigh in there at the St. Lawrence in the title event this year and saw like the sportsmanship award with Dakota Hebert, like, and just those type of things, I think go a long way, and they go a long way to sponsors too. I think that folks that follow along and see that kind of thing, shows your character and it shows, a story. So I like it.
Yeah. And I, in a way I kind of threw my tournament away by picking up John, and it's not like I meant to, it's just like one, it's just, you know, things has changed all of a sudden, but I wasn't going to leave the guy high and dry. And in fact, it ended up being really cool. He needed a top five to make the championship that year. He ended up finishing fifth, and at the championship he did well too. Like, it ended up like made his year like amazing. Otherwise he would not weighed in. Like, it was, we were so far, there were no other boats around. Like, there was no other option. So anyone would do it. I would do it for anyone, anytime. And in this situation, I might have not caught fish anyway. It's just once all this happens now, you're kind of out of your rhythm, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah. So, and then this is the last page on this one. But again, this is my general media kit, which I'm just using as an introduction to companies rather than the ask. But then there would normally be then a page of different asks, whatever it is. So like three tiers. So I'll talk about it in as much detail as I can. And I still have this, thank you page on there, and it's just, you know, whatever. And it has your name, your social media tags. I don't know if you've noticed, every single page has my email address and phone number on it. Every single page.
That's huge. I get that. I like that.
You never know what page they're going to lose or what's going to happen or whether, you know, how far they want to look in to get your info. You want them to have your info.
Sure.
Wherever they are. And then, so if it was to the point where now we're going to negotiate on what kind of deal we're going to do, then there'll be a whole page on, you know, I would call it tier one title sponsor. And that would just be a whole page. It would look like, just like this, and it'd break down all the options that they would get as a title sponsor. So, you know, I'll use FXR for an example. When I worked with, negotiated with FXR, it was actually, they really did care about the size of the logo, the placement of the logo, that kind of stuff. Where other companies, not so much. So, Lunker Hunt, my other co-title sponsor, they actually cared more about, we worked out a really special deal where I actually put in hours of work as an expert with them. So as a fishing expert, but lure designer, almost like a consultant, if you will.
Okay, I like
Some of what they pay me as a sponsorship thing, actually, I do actually have to put in work. And it's not, I mean, it's not like it's in the warehouse making baits. It's some research and design. It's talking with the design team. It's some trade show work that's really common. Pretty much everything I do would have a thing in there for trade shows, you know, ICAS, you know, whatever. And then all the way down to whatever you think you can find a little bit something different. Because everyone's going to say the same thing. Now I'll put my logo on my truck. I'll put the logo on a jersey. So you got to find something unique. And that's why I make a different media kit for every single company I'm talking to. Every single one's a complete different media kit.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to huge point here is, and that starts with some of those conversations and those initial media kit reach outs and hopefully even better if it's an in-person conversation, but really try and look for what every sponsor wants. I mean, like you're talking about here, FXR cared a lot about that logo situation. They want that stuff. And you're like, Liquor Hunt, they don't really care that I'm driving 30,000 miles a year. They're interested in the other aspect. So it's finding that exact thing. And then, like you said, building out a media kit and trying to exploit that situation and saying, hey, I can bring this to the table, you know? And I think too, some of that stuff, at least on our end with Serious Angler and through conversations, it's like, especially I think as you develop relationships with sponsors over time, is it turns into almost a brainstorming of ideas to, hey, what about doing this? Could this help you in this way? And then it kind of evolves and it just turns into something that you both get excited about because you're thinking of new ideas and ways to better the brand.
Yeah, absolutely. And get creative. You know, whatever your, if maybe you're a really good video, you know, producer, filmer, editor, offer to make videos. Content is so important with these companies. So I would often have another little section there again in the tiers. So if I would often, you know, start with three tiers. So if you're my title sponsor, you can be my called a premier sponsor or just a supporting sponsor. The money would obviously change from each one, but some of the things would stay the same. What I've done before would be like, I'll produce six custom videos of your product just for you to use. And that would be in the premium level tier. And then at the supporting level tier, the lower tier, you only get two of those videos. So it's less work for me. You get less in return as well.
Yeah.
Right. So, and that's, again, just something different. Cause like the companies, like they really do care about content. And if you're good at video, like if there's anything that I put some time in right now, it would be video editing and like website design stuff. Cause that seems to be where, you know, everyone wants help with that. So, and then like you said before, talk to the person first. Cause if you can get an idea of what they're interested in, that's why I then custom. And when I say I make a whole new media kit for each company, it's only these last few slides I changed.
Couple specifics.
Yeah. And that's always based on some sort of conversation I've had with them. Cause they might say, yeah, you know what? We don't give a rat's, you know what, about the logo. We just want videos. Well, then I'm going to formulate that package to, I'll give you lots of videos then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, I like it. And I really appreciate you breaking that down. And, I think that's going to add some value to a lot of guys' stuff. And I love how you did it. It's very professional and I like all those little things. I learned a ton just in my short little time here. So it's like something that I'm going to click back through and write down some ideas.
Yeah. And if anyone's wondering, so this was InDesign, Adobe InDesign that I actually create this with. Not everyone may not have that, but you can have some sort of like, I think Publisher is a common one, like Microsoft Publisher. InDesign is actually what like professional, like, you know, graphic designers would use for actually making a magazine. I had no idea how to use it. So my girlfriend's mom made the first one, like I mentioned. She sent me, I happen to have InDesign on my computer, never used it. Mm-hmm. She sent me the file. I then just played around with it and started just changing the pictures and this and that. And I kind of just taught myself how to do it. And it does have, like you mentioned, that professional look. I think that does go a long way. I've had a few comments just right off the bat, like, wow, like this is like legit. I go, well, yeah, you know, it's legit. Yeah. And then the other thing too is, this doesn't have to be just, hey, give me money. I want to make that clear. There are a lot of deals out there that aren't money. I mean, there's a lot of boat motor deals. They're not money. Maybe you do get a rocking deal, which is just a whole bunch of product. Like it's not all about getting money, especially to start. You can absolutely still make one of these and have a good professional media kit and just, and still negotiate, you know, still just kind of get an allowance of product for a year in there. That can absolutely be included. And there are times that I'll have that as the last option. If there's no money on the table, I'll take some product.
But, sure.
You know, so yeah. Keep an open mind about that. It's hard to get money, but you did a great job with Kenma, the last one, about talking about how to keep your sponsors happy and all that kind of stuff. Well, I think this might do a nice, a nice little fill in on how to help get some of those sponsors, or at least the way I did it.
Yeah, and start the conversation. And I think another thing too, with all of this to be said, and this is the truth with anything in this world, right? It's like, keep your head up, because you're going to get some no's. You're going to get some folks who aren't interested at all. And I think that it's okay to practice this, because it's going to be a learning curve.
So I've always said, because I really just jumped into this about 3 years ago, of just, I would spend months trying to like work on my sponsorship packages to get ready for the upcoming season. But so, you know, all of a sudden I'm full onto this, and it was almost, it reminded me of being single and going to the bar and getting shut down time after time again. And you're almost like, oh my God, like this is the worst. This is the worst thing ever. And then all of a sudden someone says yes. And you're like, whew, life's good. Like it really is. And it's not even that you get shut down. There's a lot of no response. And that's fine. Everyone's busy. They're 100%. Getting hammered with this stuff. So yeah. You get a no response. That's good, I think. And then if you get a maybe, or hey, we'll talk next year, that's all positive. But yes, that's a good point, Adam. Keep your head up, because there's a lot going on, and you keep at it and shoot for realistic goals. Like don't ask for $30,000, you know, if it's your first year fishing Toyota Series. Mm-hmm. Some of those deals might be out there, but be realistic. And sure. I try to be very realistic. I'm this new guy on the scene from Canada, fishing the pro circuit for the first time. Yeah, my asks were pretty realistic. I wasn't looking for that $50,000. But my theory was, if I got enough $5,000 or $7,500 deals, it would still cover my season. And that's kind of that's how I made it through. So I have yet to get that one big, you know, deal.
Title, yeah.
You break it down into several. And that's why I call them co-title sponsors. Well, neither of you want to be my title sponsor, we'll put you together. And now I have two title sponsors. You know, so there's lots of options there. Be flexible, be open-minded, and just be professional. And then the last step is on the contract. So every company does that separately. I let the company deal with the contract. They'll usually write it up. Some don't require contracts. Some will do it on a handshake. That's fine, as long as checks come in the mail, in my opinion. Others are really serious about it, and I let them do it. And then once that's signed, then it's obviously it's official. But it really depends on the company in that situation.
Yeah. And this is just coming from the real estate world and that kind of a thing. So, I mean, in my mind with the contract stuff, the majority of the time, it seems like the companies we've dealt with, they have a specific contract that they want you to sign. And so, with us, especially being that it's a business, and it's in an LLC, you know, we may tailor that contract slightly just to have our proper signatures and that kind of a thing. And then if it's a company that doesn't have a contract, I would say if you have any background or have anyone that can reach out to you, I just like the idea of having something in place. Not to say that a handshake deal's bad, and if you have a relationship, it's no big deal. But to me, it just makes it a little bit more professional, right? To maybe bring someone a contract, say, hey, here's my contract. Does this work for you? And it's very simple, right? It just has a list of, here's what I'm going to provide, here's what you're going to provide. And I don't know, just a thought there on my end.
I agree 100%. It protects both parties. I mean, you know, hey, I said this, you said this, we agreed. What's going on? You know, like, yeah. So that's what I try to do, even if they don't want to do it. But then it's one of those things too. Once you've been with the company for 5 or 6 years too, eventually you're just like family with them. And it's just yeah, you're good. You're on the team. Like, you don't send me this crap.
No.
You
know?
So again, it all depends. But especially if you're new with the company, something in writing. If they don't have their own, I agree with that. A simple Word document. And it just like with the real estate world, if someone's bought or sold something, that's not bought or sold until that is signed by both parties and agreed on. Like, you know, no handshakes in that world. So this is
exactly
real business, but
real business.
Treat it seriously for sure.
I like it, man. Well, thanks. This has been a great breakdown. You know, before I let you go, biggest things here, and I'll pull it away here. There's nothing else, right, on this. This is the last one. Okay. So before we go, and I'm curious because you already talked about some big smallmouth. You're in, especially in the Northern Toyota series right now, and all of that. You're in the part of the world that has giant smallmouth. So biggest largemouth, smallmouth, and spotted bass. Where you were and what you caught them on.
Biggest largemouth was on Harris Chain. I was actually pre-practicing for the pro circuit event. I caught it on a lipless trap, which is cool because that's not something I do very often back home. And I was yo-yoing it off like a eelgrass bed, and just ripped it out of my hands. Like, just ridiculous. I thought it was a 10. You know, you catch an 8-pound, you know, and I'm from Canada, and I'm jumping out there, the mouth's huge. Like, this is a 10-pounder for sure. And even when I was in the net, I'm like, this is a 10-pounder. And then it was an 8-pounder, but whatever. That's still my biggest.
I like it.
Smallmouth's a frustrating one because I've caught so many, like, high sixes, but most of them, they're in practice. So I'm pretty sure my biggest was 6.9. And it was practicing for a Toyota Series event on St. Lawrence River, and I didn't even get a picture of it. I weighed it. There was boats around me, so I just like let it go. And I was like, this is a shame. It's a giant. But yeah, so with smallies, yeah, 6.9, but I've caught a bunch of, you know, whatever. Yeah, it's usually same. Actually, we talked about before Lake Simcoe. Lake Simcoe has absolute giants in it. If anyone's had a chance to look that up or get up to Canada, it's an inland lake. It's not a great lake. It's big. It's more kind of like a Lake St. Clair. Giants. Okay. There's guys that catch eights every year, more in the fall. I have never been lucky enough to get one that big, but lots of sixes. And then my biggest spot came from, I'm pretty sure it was, I catch on, it must have been Lake Murray. Yeah, on Lake Murray. Again, practice. I keep catching my biggest ones in practice. You know, go figure.
Not the worst.
Man, if there was ever like a trophy for the best practice, I would win a bunch.
But exactly with the practice.
Yeah. I got a, it was like a 4.8-pound spot on Murray on a spy bait.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dude, okay. So I'm just curious because, and this will kind of wrap up the show here, but on the day two of Champlain, I was throwing a spy bait. Drew Brian Partek, who's an awesome guy. We had a great time. Unfortunately, his trolling motor sensor went out. And I'm like, I know what this is. I've had an Ultrex. Crap, yeah. This sucks. So he was trying to do the whole, like, Loberg had done this during the Tackle Warehouse Pro Circuit event there, like scoping with the remote. And he's like, all right, this isn't working. So we replaced it on the water. So we're doing all that, and we have to get shallow to literally get a rock to hammer the pin out on the trolling motor step. If anyone's ever done this, this is a mess, right? So we're in like 5 feet of water. We finally get it all back together, and everything's going good. And he's just screwing it back down. I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna pick a rod and just zip out a spy bait. And sure enough, dude, I stick like a 3.5-4 pounder. Gets the boat. That one stayed on. Well, I proceeded to lose a couple more big ones on that later that day, shallow. Those spy baits on real northern smallmouth, big ones, are so hard to stay pegged.
What was your rod and reel setup and line?
It was braid to fluoro leader. I think 6 or 8 pound fluoro leader, and a medium light spinning rod. But I don't know if I had the length right. So I think it was a 7-foot medium light. But I hear guys like doing it on casting rods and all kinds of stuff. I mean, what's your thoughts on it?
I think it depends on the situation. So personally, those Champlain big ones, they are just the worst. Like they, especially those
four times.
I've lost more on Champlain than anywhere else. And I like to think that I had my spy bait game pretty dialed in too. So I use the Daiwa set. They have a 7.6 medium light medium spinning. It's basically the Seth Fighter Fly rod. It's a big long 7.6. I use, about the same line. It's probably 8 or 10 pound braid to usually 6, sometimes 8 fluoro, depends on what's around me. Mm-hmm. But the only thing I learned that helps a lot is I keep the drag a little tighter at the start. And when they hit it, you gotta get them good and then back it way off and let them go nuts. The problem is that only works on Lake Ontario. Lake Simcoe is similar to that, where it's wide open. There's nothing for them to snag. No, you're in a plane up where that grass is. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. Yeah. You kind of have to horse them a bit, and those I lose them too. So I don't know what to tell you. It's The only way to not lose them is to not use a spy bait, I think, and use a single hook, a chatterbait. Remember that?
That was wicked.
Chatterbait. So, single hook lures.
No, I'm with you 100%. And actually, that's the same advice Andy, our partner on the podcast, that is the guide on Lake Erie. Same deal. He's like, dude, I drive the hooks hard. Like I swing a good strong hook set. I have my drag pretty tight, and then exactly that, I loosen things back up once.
Yeah, and it's not like a flipping jig hook set, but you lean in them.
It's a full good lean. Yeah.
So that's about the best I can say. Other than that, you're gonna lose those big smallies sometimes. It's the way it is.
It's part of it, especially treble hooks.
Yeah.
Awesome, Eric. Well, dude, I appreciate you taking the time out. Best of luck on the St. Lawrence, man. You got that coming up. I'm excited to watch how that goes. It should be a slugfest. So.
I think so.
Heck yeah.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Have a great rest of your night.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
Thanks.